It goes back to one of our core principles that I know you and I have been all about for so many years, and that is build is greater than break. It's very easy to want to just tear it all down, hit the reset button. I mean, I'm guilty of even saying that too, like, oh, we just need a hard reset, like it all just needs to be torn down, like down with the government, all that stuff. That's like, yeah, we all feel the same way.
Sure.
But the truth of the matter is if you look at the trajectory of our government, it doesn't really need a push. It's all deteriorating on its own without any of our involvement. And to be honest, perhaps a push will be needed one day. But what's way more important than tearing things down is building to have something beyond that.
Right.
And that if you look at the inception of our nation, that's what the people at the time were doing. You know, back in 1775, it wasn't a bunch of people who had no plans beyond running the British out. These were people who were living on their own. They did not need the government. They were not dependent on the British government. The government was just in the way.
Right.
And when the government was finally out of the way, they already had everything they needed to live as communities, as towns, as states, and as a nation.
Right.
Now, they had a lot of work to do, but it was because they built for so many years, it's because they had capable men, strong families, and resilient communities that our nation was born.
Right. Dude, this has been what feels to me like a really long time coming. We've been working on this, even with Nick, but we've been working on this together for 5 months?
Yeah.
6 months? I don't know. It feels like a long time.
Does.
But you've been working on it for even longer than I have. When I met you and we just continued to do life together, your vision for Dirty Civilian grew and grew as I continued to know you. And we should even go further back. I was unaware of Dirty Civilian as a whole until I started seeing, probably 5 or 6 years ago, you starting to post about it. And it was landing on t-shirts and hashtags and Instagram posts. Where did, for you, the term Dirty Civilian show up at all?
My earliest recollection of hearing Dirty Civilian was like probably 10 years ago before I ever got into like the tactical shooting world or anything like that.
Yeah.
And I was just doing research and watching YouTube videos, and there was a subreddit somewhere out there, I'm sure it still exists, of referring to civilians who were stepping out of their lane as dirty civilians.
Sure.
And at the time, it was kind of a derogatory term.
Right.
That was directed at normal, average, everyday guys like you and me who were training to a high standard, shooting like high-speed drills, doing CQB, even wearing kit, body armor.
How dare we?
Exactly, how dare we? And it was definitely directed at us from a community, or at least community members, that thought that civilians just kind of need to, like, keep quiet. You don't need those guns. You don't need an AR-15. All you need is a shotgun. You definitely don't need a plate carrier. You don't need to be thinking about those things because nothing bad will ever happen to America. That's what you have the police and the military for.
Right.
So it definitely started off as a derogatory term. And after getting called that a couple times on Instagram and like social media and stuff, I just thought it was kind of funny. I thought it was kind of a cool term.
Yeah.
And I think that over time, that the idea of a dirty civilian, it certainly wasn't directed at me.
Sure.
It was directed at this wide swath of people.
Just covering, blanket covering, anyone that you disagreed with that was just a civilian.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And so what started as a derogatory term, I think because of the circumstances in America and in the world for that matter, at the time, it has really, I feel like there's very few people who believe in self-sustainment and preparedness and being competent shooters and well-rounded individuals, there's very few people who believe in that that don't feel in some way that the term dirty civilian applies to them. Even if they're military, even if they're, you know, prior military, they're veterans,
sure,
or if they're current law enforcement, or just normal, average, everyday people. So over time, it became a term that I felt like we all kind of identified with. And so I played around with that term as well as, you know, thousands of other people for years. But over the past probably 2 or 3 years, as like more of guys like you kind of came into my life, I realized, like, you know, this is us. And it's kind of like one of those things where I don't want to say we co-opted the term, but like, you know, if someone has something against you, how, you know, if you're in a conversation with them, whether it's over the internet or in person, and they, you know, they have something bad to say about
you. Of course,
if you beat them to the punch, it's like you own that, right?
Yep, exactly. Makes it worthless now.
Exactly. Yep. And so over the course of time, it really feels like that's what we've done with Dirty Civilian. Like now I don't see it as a derogatory term.
No.
Most people wear it as a badge of honor. And it is a term that, again, pretty much anybody can identify with, because ultimately, seeing ourselves as dirty civilians is no longer something that is cast at us, or being called a dirty civilian is not something that's thrown at us from people in our own community anymore.
Right.
This is a term, even though it may not be used, it's an idea that is held by those in the highest seats of power in our world and in our government specifically.
So it's starting to go beyond just the internet and people who are in the military or were in the military and obviously think very highly of themselves for having those capabilities and maybe get a little bit of a power trip when they've been handed a gun because they went to boot camp and they got to learn how to shoot an AR or something like that. Now it's starting to look toward, and also the government as a whole views us, whether they'll put it in these terms or not, oh, they're just dirty civilians.
Yes. Yeah. See, like this, it's like the powers that be now see anyone who is not in this elite class as dirty, filthy civilians who need to stay in their lane. And while back in the day, the term originated with the thought that we need to stay in our lane as far as shooting is concerned or armor or tactics, now it's seen as we as dirty civilians need to stay in our lane. We need to be dependent on the government. We need to be spoon-fed every piece of information that we're given. We need to believe the narrative and go against it. We need to become a part of the matrix. They want us to be Mr. Smiths, right? So that is the lane that we as Americans are being put into by the powers that be, and they think we should stay there.
Right.
And it's like, no, like, we're dirty civilians.
Right.
We're not going to stay in our lane.
Right.
Like, we are going to hold ourselves to a high standard. We're going to get better. We're going to get more prepared. And the more this idea kind of came into fruition, and the more it started to kind of like coalesce like a group of guys like you and me, Nick behind the camera, Christian, a lot of the dudes in our circle, the more I realized, like, this is not my idea. This is an identity that we can all align with, and if we put our efforts together, we can do some pretty big things.
Yeah, and there's something powerful with the idea that you have been given a tag or a label, whether you accept it or not. If you are called a dirty civilian by someone else and they view you as a dirty civilian, maybe there's someone out there who has just barely broken the idea of, yeah, I actually should probably consider buying my first pistol, rifle, shotgun, depending on where they live, how old they are, and what their goals are, right? Well, they may not want to consider themselves a dirty civilian, and that's fine. That term is, in and of itself, a little bit aggressive, as it was intended to be derogatory in the first place.
It's a bit tongue-in-cheek also.
It is, like, exactly.
I think it's funny in a way.
I do too. But when someone else already gives you that label, whether you are willing to accept it or not, you have already been labeled that.
Yep.
And so it's worth paying attention to the fact that we are saying, hey, this is already an identity that you are, that you belong to. And many of you, whether you know it or not, already belong to that identity. And so that brings us to what it is that we're trying to do. And man, this conversation, we have a lot to cover here in regards to the first podcast and what it is that we need to talk about. But something very key that you pointed out there was that this is beyond yourself. It's beyond me. It's beyond Specialist Nicholas Jones behind the camera and everyone else involved in our crew all across the states. I mean, worldwide for that matter. There are dirty civilians everywhere, whether they recognize it themselves or not.
Yeah, and there's no way around it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay, so Dirty Civilian, we had this idea, and we've thought for a while about what it is that we want to accomplish, but the mission statement, we finally got down kind of right before we launched, and there's a few cool stories that, you know, are worth sharing, but the mission statement as a whole is, it's a job for us, obviously. It defines what it is that we are trying to do with this community. It's funny because community is kind of the punchline at the end of our mission statement. But the mission statement, let's see if I can do it without reading it. I'll do this off the top of my head. The mission statement for Dirty Civilian is to inform and inspire competent men to build strong families and resilient communities.
Capable.
Not competent. Dang it. I didn't, couldn't do it without reading it.
It's fun.
I've been trying to say it in my own head a couple times.
It's because we're live.
Right. That's probably true. Okay, so capable. So inform and inspire. How are those two different to you, and why do we have both of those in there together?
Yeah, so to me, you can't really have one without the other. If you're inspired to do something, that's awesome. You need that. But without the proper information, or at least the proper resources, you're just going off in any different direction. And a great example of this is like early days of Instagram. Everybody was inspired to go out and buy a pistol, some kind of sidecar style holster, and plate carrier, and just start burning down drills. Yep. And that was great. Like, and being just inspired is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It gets people going. And a lot of times they catch up with the information after the fact, which, you know what? That's still a net win. A lot of people have the information, but if they don't have the inspiration to go out and do stuff, if they don't, kind of goes back to that old Don Miller quote from Blue Like Jazz. Like, it's you almost have to see someone loving something before you can love it yourself.
Sure.
Yeah. I know in college I took a jazz class. I got a D.
You did?
I did. It was called Jazz Appreciation, which anytime you have to take a class to make you appreciate something, it's probably not worth
taking. Not for you, yeah.
But the idea was essentially that, you have to see someone passionate about something in order to catch that passion for yourself.
Agreed.
So it's the duality, it's the fullness of both. Kind of like, you know, Jesus was the fullness of grace and truth. It's like, this is the fullness of information and inspiration, and when you mix those two together, you actually get forward progress.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when we talk about making or informing and inspiring capable men, we're talking about providing information or pointing people to information, pointing people to resources, because at the end of the day, you and I are experts on very few things.
Like, if anything,
like, we're good at stuff. We're decently well-rounded, but we are not the experts.
Well, and here's something that I had written down, a very key point that I really want to emphasize for a long time as we continue to grow this brand and this company and this entire movement as a whole, is the idea that, what are we good at? We're both actually really good at intaking information, and we're good at sharing information once we understand it.
Yep.
And so a big strength to what DC is going to be doing as we move forward is, while we are not professionals in something like water purification systems.
Sure.
You need water every day. You need water multiple times a day. And if some wild natural disaster were to take place, or the government were to do something kind of crazy, if water is not around, the world falls apart pretty quick.
Sure.
Okay, so if we can't do that, how are we going to teach others? Actually, we need to go find someone else who is capable. Well, you and I are both fairly well communicated and linked and built into an industry of people who have those natural skill sets, those capabilities. They've taken classes. And so we're going to actually go out, meet with those people, build relationships, make sure that they are good with us sharing that information, whether we are purchasing that information from them or we are being open and honest about what it is that we're trying to do. And then share that free info, that life-saving or life-building or community-building information with others that we didn't have in the first place. So the fact that we're good at learning, we're connected, and we have a way to share information puts us in a pretty unique spot where we're able to go find those people who are the professionals, learn from them, and then share that information willingly as well.
Yeah, I think that it's really easy anytime you start a company or a channel or any sort of endeavor to feel the draw to prop yourself up as the authority. We see it all the time in this industry. Or you only release content in your wheelhouse, or you only release content that makes you look like
a pro.
Right. And I've gotten a lot of practice at creating content that clearly displays that I'm not a pro. Right?
Sure.
So like I'm okay with that. And if there's anything that I feel like you and I are good at, it's actually connecting with people and being lifelong students. Really what we're doing here in terms of sharing information is we are talking very little about what we are good at and what we do know, but more than anything, we're just pulling people along for the journey as we learn from experts that we've met, that we're finding, that we already have pre-existing relationships with, and not just as far as guns are concerned. I feel like a lot of things that start within this wheelhouse is all about the gun, all about the rifle, all about the tactics. And it's like, the truth of the matter is that is just one of the very few components to being a capable person.
You can be
very capable with a gun.
Right.
We both are. We could both be way better.
Of course.
But that's only going to go so far when there's no food in the grocery stores.
Yes. Yeah, your Glock 19 is not going to be supplying you food in the suburbs unless you are doing something immoral or unjust.
Exactly, yeah. Which we would never advocate.
Exactly.
The idea is to be prepared for what is coming, and I think that it's not a far cry to say that hard times are ahead. We are in that natural life cycle of generational ups and downs, where weak men have created hard times that are coming.
Exactly.
And the idea is that we're sharing this information as we're learning it. Mm-hmm. Some things we already know pretty well. We're presenting that. But that in and of itself is inspiring, and the way that we tell these stories and the way that we share these informations is inspiring as well. Because there's nothing more inspiring than seeing someone that's like you who's figuring something out just a little bit ahead of you.
And that is on fire about it already.
Exactly.
Well, and another point that you made while we were working on building out this mission statement specifically, and it's honestly taken us months to actually nail down specifically what it is that we're trying to do, but the term capable men, to a degree, we almost feared that we were going to nix...
Alienate,
that's the better term. People who see the mission statement and go, yeah, but I'm not capable yet. Maybe I'm at a young age and I haven't had the exposure in life that I've been looking for, and I'm trying to break out of that cycle and go find some life experience. I am looking to have the opportunity to be capable. The reality is, though, and you made this point while we were talking about this, everyone is capable. Everyone is capable of something. And the person who can run a marathon every day, there are people out there that can, you know, run 26 miles a day. And there are also people that struggle to get their shoes tied. For me, I have to have a couple cups of coffee before I'll actually go out and do something in the morning, despite the fact I get up early, right?
I don't know how you do it.
Okay, well, there are people who struggle with getting exercise every single morning. You are capable of getting up. It may be difficult. Mm-hmm. It may be hard. But recognizing that I am capable of something and I am in that category, all of a sudden is starting a fire. If you are willing to take on the ownership of, I want to be inspired and I want to gather information, I want to build families and build resilient communities, you are capable, but everyone starts somewhere. It's like going to the gym. It's like shooting a gun. It's like drawing from a sidecar for the first time. Yeah, man, you're going to have to suck at it for a little while before you get somewhere. And I'm still not a pro at any of these things.
Yeah.
But the acknowledgement of, right, but you're capable of something, right?
Yeah, and not to steal a very common adage these days, but you're capable of making your own bed. And when you hear the mission statement of DC, and you think that this is only geared towards capable men, you're right. But what we want people to understand is that's you, whether you know it or not. You need to look at what your current capabilities are.
Yeah.
And the more that you realize how capable you are, the more you also start to see it in others.
Exactly.
Because it's very easy to dismiss your neighbors or friends and think like, oh, they're worthless. Like, no, they're capable of something too.
Right.
And when they see you start to step up and when you start to share that information with them,
right,
all of a sudden they start seeing themselves in a different way. They start becoming more capable. Maybe you need to identify their strengths for them because they've never
Certainly.
Thought about it. But it's a call to action to be capable, but it's also a reminder that you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're far from where we need to be.
Sure.
I am, like, in many ways, I would say I'm absolutely not capable, right?
Yeah,
same. And that's the
same.
Point. Is that it's not a destination you ever reach.
Right.
So.
Yep, exactly. So capable men, not to alienate women, but through our upbringing, through, church-centered morals, Christ-centered morals, everything that we've been given, it's the way that we view family. It is the man's responsibility, which is also a burden to bear,
yeah,
to lead the family. Not, again, not that women can't lead,
sure,
but it is the man's, it is his responsibility,
yeah,
to lead a family. And that's where we start to lead into strong families.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also something that we really want to stress about as well. You can go through life alone, but if you go through life alone, you're going to die alone.
Yep.
And we were created to be social creatures, and we were created for family as well. And we're going to have to try to push. This may be a spot that you and I both have to push specifically because, yeah, we're both married. We, you know, I still at this point have a kiddo on the way and you have a family at least going already. But we both, from what I gather, can do a really good job of working on, I want to build myself and I really want to build my community as far as social media goes.
Mm-hmm.
We unplug from social media and we go spend time with family, which is probably exactly how it should be. We're going to have to work to actually bring out what it is that we're actually doing to build strong families. But that is a very key component before you can then grow further into community.
Yeah. Well, they all kind of have a symbiotic relationship with each other in a way, because capable men or men who are trying to increase their capabilities, the natural byproduct, well, it might not be natural, but one of the byproducts, if they're very specific about it, is mm-hmm. that they start to make a more capable family, which is essentially a stronger family.
Right.
The more squared away you are as a man, physically, mentally, financially, it sets your family up for success.
Right.
I mean, I know I don't speak for myself here. I know you feel the same way about Jenna, but at least with my wife, while this endeavor is geared towards us guys, the fact of the matter is that some of the most resilient generations and some of the strongest generations of people in our country, every single person in that family was capable.
Absolutely.
The men, the wife, the children.
Yep.
I mean, one of the whole purposes of having a lot of kids was so all those kids could be farmhands
sure.
to help you survive.
Yep.
So the more the man becomes capable, the more it unlocks capabilities for everyone in their household.
Right.
And when that household becomes capable and self-sustaining and able to take care of themselves,
yep.
well, if the household across the street does the same and across the yard does the same and the whole neighborhood does the same thing,
right.
then all of a sudden you have a resilient community.
Yes.
And that is the kind of thing that survives what is coming.
Right.
And that is what we're concerned about. Like, I think it's really easy for people I know it's easy for me. I fall into this trap too. Grouping around breaking things down. Like, it's very easy to to want to rally around the outcry of, like, you know, destroy the ATF,
yes.
like, the government is corrupt,
it's,
we need to tear it.
Like you pointed out, it's Travis Haley's common enemy intimacy. It's so easy to find something. The ATF is burning Portland, the ATF. Antifa is burning Portland, where I escaped from a couple of years ago. The ETF is taking all of our rights away. Taxes are being raised. Homeschool is looked down upon. So on and so forth. It's so easy to point to all of the problems in the world and say, they are causing all the problems, and I can't control those things.
Yeah, it goes back to one of our core principles that I know you and I have been all about for so many years, and that is build is greater than break. Build
yeah.
over break.
Dude.
Because
yes.
it's very easy to want to just tear it all down. Hit the reset button. I mean, I'm guilty of even saying that too. Like, oh, we just need a hard reset. Like, it all just needs to be torn down. Like, down with the government, all that stuff. That's like, yeah, we all feel the same way.
Sure.
But the truth of the matter is if you look at the trajectory of our government, it doesn't really need a push. It's all deteriorating on its own without any of our involvement. And to be honest, we probably don't matter that much.
Sure.
Perhaps a push will be needed one day, but what's way more important than tearing things down is building to have something beyond that.
Right.
And that if you look at the inception of our nation, that's what the people at the time were doing.
Exactly.
This was, you know, back in 1775, it wasn't a bunch of people who had no plans beyond the fall of beyond running the British out. These were people who were living on their own. They did not need the government. They were not dependent on the British government. The government was just in the way.
Right.
And when the government was finally out of the way, they already had everything they needed to live as communities, as towns, as states, and as a nation.
Right.
Now, they had a lot of work to do, but it was because they built for so many years. It was because they had capable men, strong families, and resilient communities that our nation was born.
Right. So in regards to where we're at right now, a lot of people are probably finding us through social media.
Yep.
In the firearms industry that you and I have both been invested, I mean, again, as well as Nick, we've been invested in for years now. Our own community does an amazing job at tearing ourselves down.
Oh, all the time.
And that is also a reflection of family. In a way, I mean, that's a broader scale. And when we say family, we legitimately mean family. You call your mom, if you haven't called your mom recently. You know, talk to your dad, build relationships with your spouse, your kids, the people around you, and then that bleeds out into community. But also family as a bigger term also extends to this firearms industry that is so good at saying, well, you didn't put a stock on it, you're still running a pistol brace, you're the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Or you are running a stock, you are the problem. They're coming after all of us because of you. Or on and on and on. You didn't sign the whatever bill that was going to go to whatever else. You didn't vote for this person. You didn't vote. It is so easy for us to thrash anybody and everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And if you scroll through and you know an Instagram profile for 30 seconds, anybody could find something to complain about and hate that person for and dog on them for on social media for years.
Yeah.
And we do it all the time.
Well, it goes back to the point that I don't think we've talked about this before, but you can either make a point or you can make a difference.
Oh.
And I think a lot of people in this industry, it's not specific to this industry.
Sure.
This is a human problem. And we've all done this before, where it's super easy to try and make a point because you think someone needs to be called out or whatever. But if you wanted to make a difference, it would look radically different. You would not be hopping onto Instagram, making some remark about how this person is doing something the wrong way, or it could be better. Like, you're not out to get anybody. If you want to make a difference, you build a relationship with that person, and then you speak truth into their life, and you open yourself up to what they had to say about you.
Right.
That's how you make a lasting difference.
Right.
And at the very least, you have a better understanding. You know, it goes back to, you know, seek to understand before being understood.
Yep.
So I think one of the things that we're trying to do here is we're trying to make a difference, not a point.
Yep.
And I think what a lot of people are going to see in this endeavor is that we're going to talk to a lot of people who we are totally on the same page with, and we're going to talk to a lot of people who we disagree with, and we don't necessarily approve of their approach, but...
Yep.
We're trying to get to know them.
Right.
We know that they have value.
Right.
Maybe we differ on our delivery.
Sure.
but we're all dirty civilians.
Right.
Let's figure this out, right. And how can we all grow?
Exactly. And like you said, there are, I can think of plenty of people in the gun world that I disagree with, don't like, don't want to interact with, but that is not why we're here. And we may not choose to go out of our way to go spend time with that person or, I don't know, take a class from them, whatever it is. But we're not going to work to tear them down because someone else may be learning valuable information from them. I just had a bad interaction, or I do not like their morals or their ethics or whatever it is. And I'm not going to work to tear them down. So build, don't break. And then the other one that you said was you can either make a point or make a difference.
Yeah.
That's, you're full of those.
Well,
you're full of these like one-liners. The other favorite one that you say all the time, which I had not heard until I met you, was what's the one with the smile?
Oh, you can do more with a gun and a smile than you can with just a gun.
Yeah,
yeah,
dude.
I think that was Al Capone that said that.
Really?
So yeah, a murderer said that. And look, we have this nugget of truth and wisdom.
And here we are.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So we've gone through. Kind of lost my spot. Okay. Here I am. So let's see. A point that also needs to be made is the fact that we both feel very called to this. And this is still a mission statement that we would be living out, whether we had taken time to verbalize it or not. And I think you can probably point to the fact that, because I've seen you living this mission statement as a whole through social media and in life in general. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to, like, what is it that we're trying to do, regardless of if we never make any money? What does this mean to you?
Yeah, well, so I feel like this is way bigger than just a company. Like, yeah, you and I are treating it like a company, like a business. But, you know, early on we agreed that this is something we're already doing. Mm-hmm. We just haven't put a name to it.
Right.
And if we put a name to it, we can actually do it in a bigger and better way and help more people and build stronger communities and all that stuff. So this is beyond a business. This is beyond a company. You know, like they say in V for Vendetta, you know, it's the ideas that are bulletproof,
right?
This is way bigger than us. This is something we've already been doing for free.
Right.
This is something we will continue to do for free.
Yep.
It is a movement. It is a purpose. It is a mission that is not just true for you and me, but so many people, even if they haven't defined it as that yet.
Yep.
So that's really how I kind of see it.
Exactly. Well, and on that point, right as we finished wrapping up we weren't even done finishing with the mission statement. We were working on this, and I remember saying in my head, I just sent out a quick little prayer. I was like, God, we're struggling with this. Please show us exactly what it is that you want us to say and how to phrase this. You went and grabbed a Bible. And this company is not going to be all about, you know, Bible thumping people about our religion or our relationship with Christ.
Sure.
But truth is undeniable.
Yes.
Regardless of where it's coming from, truth is undeniable. And you just so happen to flip open to Ephesians 6, 10 through 12.
Which is one of my pet peeves, by the way. Like, I used to, you know, I used to be a youth director way back in the day. And I would never consider myself like a Bible thumper I was a very rough around the edges kind of guy.
Those were my favorite.
Yeah, so like totally not qualified for the job, but still managed to do a good job
Perfect.
At it.
Perfect.
And it would always drive me crazy when, you know, the hardcore Christians would be like, oh, I flipped to this verse and I just magically found it. And I was like, oh, yeah, whatever.
Did
like,
it
okay,
really,
whatever.
Though?
And then this happens.
Right.
And I'll let you tell a story, but.
Well, no, so you flip it open and you just start reading. So Ephesians 6.
I jokingly flipped it open.
Yeah.
And then we were like stopped dead in our tracks. Like,
both just
what
pulled
in the
into
world?
This. Yeah. We both laughed and like slapped each other on the back and like prayed about it, because this was one of those divine intervention moments for sure. And then directly after it, we nailed the mission statement. Okay, I'll read this real quick. Ephesians 6, verse 10. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the armor of God so that you can take a stand against the devil and his schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood. And this leads right into putting on and explaining what the armor of God is, which is beautiful in its own way. And something that, you know, we as men should probably go back to and recognize, yeah, what is that and what does that mean? But this is a call. And this is a why. Why are you putting on the armor? Well, if you're watching this, you can probably tell. There is evil in this world. There is brokenness in this world. There are evil schemes meant to trip us up, trip other people up. Sin that just breaks families and destroys communities and tears down nations, right? Well, our call is to be putting on the armor of God and to stand against evil.
Mm-hmm. And God and Jesus was the fullness of grace and truth.
Right.
Like, I mean, people can dive into what the actual armor of God is in that verse, but when you're talking about, like, the kind of person you're becoming, it's a person that should be full of grace and at the same time, like, unabashed truth.
Right.
Right? And the cool part about this is, while you and I are both followers of Jesus, it goes back to the whole thing that you said, which is truth is undeniable.
Right.
Even if someone who is watching this, is listening to this, is not a Christian, does not believe in any of this stuff, the truth that there are forces at play that are beyond us, that are meant to make us as men stumble and fall and shatter and be dependent and be slaves, that's undeniable.
Yes.
We all know it. Look at our society.
Right.
Look at our world. Rampant pornography.
Yeah.
Distractions everywhere.
Yep.
Failing economic systems that are basically designed to enslave people and keep them in a cycle of owning nothing and being happy. A system that wants you to be dependent, doesn't want you to have your own eggs, doesn't want you to be able to sell your own raw milk, doesn't want you to be able to produce natural gardens. Like, they want us to be slaves. And that is the most evil thing that I can think of, one of the most dehumanizing things that there is. It's undeniable. That is a truth that goes beyond whatever you believe. So,
dude, you freaking nailed it. Because Christ is an opportunity to step away from slavery.
Yes.
And the speaking toward spiritual and earthly evil at the same time, yeah, the devil is the prince of darkness. And this earth is where he reigns at this time. But we are also strangers and aliens here, and this is not where we belong.
And also, if you want to pull up that other verse that we stumbled on after that.
Dude,
so this is directly related.
Yeah, you found that in the like the footnotes or something. So this was Matthew 16, 18.
Yes, because this to me is where the initial verse is very much about what you should do.
Right.
This is very much what you need to remember, that while evil forces are at play, while powerful foes are against us,
yes,
both that we can see and the things that we cannot quite understand, there is something beyond all of this. If you want to,
I will. But before I say this, you said something that this verse, when we found it, reflected as, in a way, an answer to prayer, because it was exactly what we were already saying. You said, "Beyond the resistance,"
mm-hmm.
as in we are looking to build beyond the collapse.
Yes,
there will be a collapse,
mm-hmm.
both in our nation and in our world.
And that's not unpatriotic.
No,
that's
no,
just
no.
Historically realistic.
Exactly.
It will happen. It may be a small one. It may be a major one. But there's no denying what's coming.
Right. Nothing lasts forever.
Exactly.
That's what we're getting at. So building beyond the resistance. We're not just trying to survive the war, whatever that means, whatever the war is in your life. We're trying to build far beyond that.
Even if it's not in our lifetime.
Exactly. So Ephesians 16:10 was referencing Matthew 16:18. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Dude, the gates of hell will not prevail against the church and the rock that he builds it upon.
What you're building towards, the worst that this world has to throw at it, it won't take it
right
down.
Yep.
And that goes back to, it's kind of funny, I think, that this is kind of indicative of how God works too. Sometimes people find God and learn truth, and sometimes people find truth and God speaks to them through that and pulls them closer to himself.
Exactly.
And there's this truth that we all know and that we can't deny, which is it's not just about breaking things. We have to be about building things. The breaking is the natural life cycle of this world. The building is something that takes intentionality and purpose and focus. And that's what we want to do.
Right.
It's not about breaking. It's about building to live beyond the hells that are coming.
Yep. And we do not want to be the men that build upon sand.
Exactly.
Right. Okay, so I have one final question for you. And I'll probably jump in here too, because this is one of my favorite talking points. We chose an animal, and there's so many companies out there that are like, it seems like most night vision companies, what animal do they choose to support their night vision endeavors?
Some kind of animal with a skeleton, a skeletal animal head with night vision on it, or a wolf or an owl or something like that.
Exactly. I see a ton of owls, and all those other companies have wolves, or they have lions, or whatever else.
Which is awesome. Like, I love all that stuff.
Absolutely. We wanted something that specifically had a little bit of a story behind it, as in, we love the aspects of that animal.
Mm-hmm. I wanted a hyena at first, remember?
You did.
Yeah, because I always liked the smiling hyenas.
Yes.
And it went back to the whole gun and a smile thing.
Do you remember my reasoning for saying no to the hyena?
Yeah, they're horribly unethical, like, They're great.
They hardly kill anything themselves. Mm-hmm. They just go steal food from others.
Yes.
They're always portrayed as the bad guys. Even go back to like the Lion King.
Yeah.
Like kids grow up thinking that hyena is, it's a bad hyena.
My daughters don't like the hyenas.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They killed Mufasa.
Exactly.
Well, and then we found the African painted dog.
Yes.
Which has natural camouflage, and sure, a ton of animals do. Lions and tigers, and yeah, they all do as well. But the camo on an African painted dog is super cool.
They're the gray man.
Yeah, yeah, in many ways they are, yeah. Yes. But there's more to it than that. They have those big satellite dishes for ears. Dude, they look like they hear everything.
Yep.
They're just sitting, listening around to what everyone else is doing. What else is going on out there? Mm-hmm. And as we did a little bit more research, some more stuff came up. Like, they live in community, and they need community to thrive.
Yep.
So much so that they're one of the only mammals that will regurgitate food. It's a little bit strange, but not just for their young ones, for other adults that have not eaten recently.
Yeah, they will share from time to time,
yes,
their kills.
Yep.
They also have the greatest success rate and survival rate of pretty much any predator in the world. I think it's like an 80% successful hunt rate.
Yeah, up to 90% success rates.
Yeah. Work together to achieve that.
They do. Do you know how they do it?
How?
They
actually don't know how.
You said that in such like a how. They will chase their prey for up to an hour until they just exhaust it.
Oh, yeah.
So as opposed to like a cheetah that has a crazy burst of energy, or lions that will just have to work together and surround it, they'll all chase something together, but they will keep going.
They're in it for the long game.
They will outrun and just keep going until the animal is exhausted. And then they'll just take it down and eat it there. It's kind of an interesting way that it's like, dude, that is a strange way to accomplish your mission, but it's a good reminder. Yeah, man, it's going to be 6 times as long as, I can do this for 10 minutes. Yeah, do it for 60.
Mm-hmm.
Keep going. That's what it's going to take.
Yep.
And we threw all these together and it's like, no one else has an African painted dog. Also, who doesn't love dogs?
Yeah.
That's kind of a big one as well. Community-based, they self-sacrifice for each other. They give up food that they already thought was theirs. They hunt well, incredibly successfully, and they do it by just grinding it out and keep going.
Mm-hmm.
I said I was going to ask you a question, and then I went and talked about African painted dogs.
No, that's
okay,
fine.
So I'll throw one more question, and I'll let you actually answer this.
Okay.
Dude, we've been working on content for months.
Yes.
And we've dropped hardly any content at this point. There's a lot more on the way.
Yeah, I guess we should probably give people a preview of that.
Yes.
So one of the things that you guys can kind of expect to see is, like aforementioned, Josh and I and all the dudes in our crew learning new skill sets from subject matter experts. I know just a couple hours before we recorded this pod, we were having a kind of like a team meeting or a friend huddle where we had two guys who have actually, you know, done stuff, walk us through different components of the Ranger Handbook.
Yep.
Again, that's just one little tiny thing. But we've got a lot of different kind of content already pre-produced, ready to roll out in quarter one of this new endeavor.
Yep.
Everything from, I don't want to give too much away,
sure,
but there's going to be some shooting involved. There's going to be some dirt bikes involved.
Sure.
And there's also going to be some homesteading and milking goats involved because,
nice.
I mean, let's face it, I get tons of questions about that.
Of course, yeah.
But more than anything, the thing that I'm actually the most excited about are some of these conversations we've had with friends and with acquaintances within this industry and some outside of it that are very real and raw, open and honest and vulnerable.
Yeah.
Questions that really bring out the personal and the personal side of some people that that a lot of our viewers are going to know from the industry.
Right.
Some questions that are going to bring out the humanity of situations and crazy circumstances that people have found themselves in. I think that is going to be, that kind of content and those kinds of conversations are undeniable.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm really excited about. So it's the content for the podcast, also the content for YouTube. It's going to be super fun, entertaining, but at the same time, very informative.
Right.
It's going to be a wild ride.
Right.
So
I agree. Well, dude, we did it. We launched this thing, which still kind of blows my mind. But honestly, now the heavy lifting starts.
Yeah.
We got a lot of work in front of us.
Yep. Let's go.
Let's do it.